The last couple weeks in the swimming world, lots has gone down. We've completed the mid-season stretch of the NCAA year. Thanksgiving mixed in there. Des, how was Thanksgiving for you? Everything good over there in Virginia?
Get over here in Virginia. Family came and visited. Got to watch some fast swimming, look at results from fast swimming. Lot to process over the last couple of weeks, kind of like you talked about. How was your Thanksgiving, man?
Yeah, let's all go over here. Yeah, just got to round out Thanksgiving with some few days over at the Minnesota Invites down in the G.K. Freeman Natatorium. So good time all in all, but I think we should just, hop right in to a lot of meets to cover today. Lots of things to talk about, opinions to give about mid-season, the landscape of swimming, and we're halfway through the year now, so I think it's time, that we take a look back and, see where the landscape sits in terms of, who's looking good, who's not, and kind of where we go from here heading into the big winter training block. So I think we should just get straight into it this week, talking about the CSCAA Dual Meet Challenge in Tennessee. I think this was the keynote event of kind of the mid-season cycle here. Tennessee taken, well, I guess the spearheaded by the CSCAA at Tennessee, kind of just trying to take a different approach to mid-season and what that could look like differently. So we just want to give a little refresher, Des, quickly on what that looks like over in Tennessee for people, and then we can kind of get into what we thought.
It was a pretty cool meet format. It was a little bit different. They ended up seeding teams 1 through 4, and then had like a winner's bracket and loser's bracket, and kind of had a way to work yourself back up. On the women's side, UVA dominated and won the whole thing. And then the University of Michigan got second, Tennessee third, and ASU fourth. And then on the men's side, ASU men absolutely dominated. And then Tennessee men second, Michigan men third, UVA men fourth. Overall,
It was.
interesting meet. There were a lot of cool little bells and whistles in there if you want to talk about that.
I mean, there was a few aspects of the meet that were a little bit different than what we saw down in Georgia earlier this season. Mainly, I guess the notables, only four teams on each side instead of eight. They went for the double elimination instead of bracket style, and then they had timeouts within the meet, which I think is something that we kind of saw play out a little bit as a talking point. And then we saw kind of the evolution of the meet lineup from day to day. So obviously it being a 3-day meet, the meet lineups changed and got the meet lineups got longer to include more events as the days went on, with the full dual meet lineup that we're traditionally familiar with on the third day. So that's kind of ran through the finishing order on both sides, with UVA women and ASU men coming out on top. And I think when we previewed this meet, I think Des and I both went on a limb, gave Tennessee men a little bit more credit than they maybe warranted. So we gotta own up to that. Really, I think if you looked at things objectively on paper, though, it would have been hard to write off UVA women and ASU men, and that's really how it shook out. And to be honest, there wasn't a whole lot of parody or doubt about that result being what was going to happen. So right off the gun, Des, with the meet kind of playing out relatively exactly as we expected, how does that shape your opinion of how this meet, how we should view this meet or not?
I don't know. I mean, that it could also just be the teams that they had at the meet. If you look at results from the whole year, like Virginia has been dominating everyone they've swam against. ASU men have been dominating everyone they've swam against. And I think when you throw those two teams in a tournament without some other big notable names like Cal on the women's side and Stanford and Texas, then those two teams are really going to dominate, I think, whoever they come up against. I do think that it was a lot of fun to look at the results, but for me, when I watched the meet, it was rather boring, which is kind of ironic because that was the exact opposite of what they were going for when they started making the format of this meet. Were you able to watch it all?
Yeah, I was watching a little bit. I was really excited actually to, get in there Friday or Thursday. And wait, when was the first? It was a Friday morning.
It was Friday.
Friday morning was the first meet. pull up the stream. One thing that was weird is it was bouncing back and forth from being on USA Swimming or ACC or SEC Network or something. It kept switching back and forth where the meet was actually getting streamed. And this is tough for me to say, but it was definitely, I think this from a viewing perspective, not at the meet. I can't speak to what that looks like for the fans who were there, but I think I was a little bit underwhelmed. Certainly, we were pretty frustrated about how the Georgia meet was produced to the public elsewhere. But I think really I was hoping for more from this, from a TV production side. And I don't think it was there. I think the biggest issue that I had right away was with each team having 2 5-minute timeouts. That means for an hour meet, there was about 20 minutes of timeout time. And the coaches were calling them early and often. And so, especially when there's, I mean, I'm not saying we should need like commercials and stuff during the meets, but there was half the time I was just staring at the scoreboard at Tennessee countdown from 5 minutes, which was a little bit, and I don't know, maybe during those breaks at the meet, they were Kyle Sockwell and the other people they had down there were filling in with, you know, fan events and stuff. But from a viewing perspective, it was kind of honestly not very engaging when that was kind of really what they were trying to do with this whole lineup in the first place.
I will say I really enjoyed the fact that there was a score bug that updated instantly with points. I did not like the matchup format that they had. So we even talked about this. Yeah, we talked about our last pod, but what they did was it was 3 separate matchups. And whoever won the matchup and got the fastest overall time got 3 points, 2 points?
2 points.
2 points. And then whoever won the other 2 matchups got 1 point. It added a lot more strategy to the meet, but if I was going in and I didn't know that they were doing that format at all, it would have been very confusing. From someone who doesn't know anything about swimming, and they see a guy who got 5th place but got a point because he beat that 6th place person in his matchup. And, you know, it doesn't make any sense that he got a point to someone and the 3rd place guy maybe didn't, right? Just really weird in that sense. But I really enjoyed that there was a scoring bug and you could see live updates throughout the meet. The timeout thing is a major issue. I agree.
Yeah, I think they'll get sorting out, I think, maybe 3 minutes, 2 minutes. I think we talked a little bit about, I mean, we don't know exactly what the rationale was between for the timeouts being used when they were during the meet, to maybe it was to give people extra time to cool down or just a couple of minutes before the race. But I think from a viewer perspective, if there wasn't, I mean, like in football, you're watching the game and someone calls a timeout with 2 minutes left in the game, it's obvious they want to think something over a little bit more, think about the play they want to run there. From at least, I mean, maybe it's just the first time we're seeing this format, but the timeouts seem kind of willy-nilly here and there and ended up just kind of slowing down the overall meet. So certainly, I think I don't want to, you know, let the conversation spiral too negatively, but I think there were definitely pieces that could have gone better. And I think, you know, the commentators did a great job early on saying, you know, this is going to be chaos. The scoring is weird. This is different. And so just kind of we're all learning together. And that is kind of what you have to do when you're trying to take a radical twist on what a meet looks like. But I think one thing that we definitely can't not discuss about this meet was it was a little bit unfortunate that the first meet that we saw, which was Tennessee ASU on both sides, the 1v4 seed, we saw UVA kind of employ the same strategy for different reasons on both of their men's and women's team. Do you want to kind of walk me through what we kind of saw play out there in that first meet?
Yeah, UVA versus ASU. ASU came out guns a-blazing, kind of like their best lineup, best foot forward. And UVA kind of did the opposite. They only swam their best swimmers on relays. And a lot, some of them swam one individual event, some of them swam no individual events. And they basically, on the men's side, just kind of threw the white towel and were like, let's move on to the next meet and see if we can take on, you know, the winner of the Michigan, which ended up being Michigan, Tennessee. The winner ended up being Michigan there to see if they can beat them. And the women's side, they did the same thing, but they ended up dominating anyway, just because they have that much depth, so much more depth and speed than ASU women have.
I think you meant the Tennessee men got the win against Michigan men, right?
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, they ended up going against Michigan. That's my fault.
But no, I think the point still comes across there in that, I mean, you look at the swim comments right after that first meet finish, and it was hot and heavy in the swim comments about the whole format of the meet being stupid. You know, Thomas Heilman and Max Smith-Williams not even swimming, Anna Moche not swimming. So, I mean, it was tough. And it was really too bad that was kind of how the meet started off, because I thought the Michigan-Tennessee meet that followed up was actually a great meet. And we saw, you know, the return of Bella Sims. That was a big togger. You know, Geek Ree showed up meet after meet that weekend. So, I mean, it was too bad that's kind of how that worked out. And you know what? I actually give some credit to UVA and trying to, you know, embrace the potential of what this meet can be and try to, you know, try something different, see what works. You know, are the optics of it great? Not necessarily, but I also don't completely blame them for, you know, trying to embrace kind of the more strategy component that this new meet lineup was, you know. So
yeah, I think that, like you said, they were trying something out. Now, I do think that they were probably trying to set their men up to possibly beat Michigan the next day, who they ended up almost beating. Like, they came down to the last relay, the last couple of races, and ended up being a really good meet. On the women's side, like, they don't have to put their best foot forward to win. So why would we waste our best swimmers' energy when we can get the job done, move on, and then absolutely dominate and throw in everything they've got at the Michigan woman? Which I think makes a lot more sense on the women's side than the men's side. But you also are, you know, you have to think about this. They don't have in their midseason meet. So this was their midseason invite. You have teams who are going, you know, 3 to 4 days of midseason prelims final sessions. You're swimming a little bit less here. So you're taking away those swims from your best swimmers like Maximus, like David King, like Thomas Heilman. You're taking over, taking their swims away from them. They don't have as many opportunities to swim fast as you would during a normal midseason invite. So it was an interesting strategy on that end, I think.
Yeah, that's always coming back in to defend his UVA boys.
I'm not defending anyone. I'm you know.
No, yeah, I think you're right. And I mean, there was even discussion about whether or not, you know, UVA wanted to set up Heilman for a duel against Ilya Karun in the fly events. Did they want that situation early on in the NCAA season, where you probably have Thomas being someone who envisions himself, you know, winning the 100 fly or 200 fly at NCs down the line? Do you want him, you know, potentially taking a losing to Ilya in that head-to-head format at this time of the season? I would say, I think it's good experience in every single NCAA race that you can take right now is beneficial being a freshman. So I mean, I think every swimmer is going to, you know, respond differently to winning and losing. And if you keep him on a roll, maybe he just goes all the way.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's an interesting point. I don't really know what they were trying to get out of that. Like, there are so many different ways to view it and look at it. And who knows, maybe that's why Todd ended up doing it, is he was trying to get people to spark some conversation about stuff like that. Either way, interesting decision there on that end. And then the next day, obviously, we had UVA versus Michigan on both sides. And then we had Tennessee versus ASU on both sides. ASU ended up coming out on top on the men's side. And then Tennessee ended up coming out on top on the women's side. And then UVA absolutely dominated on the women's side against Michigan women. And then the men just fell short. UVA just fell short to Michigan on the men's side. And the Michigan men looked pretty solid throughout. I thought they had a lot of good swims. Tyler Ray looks like he's firing on all cylinders right now.
Yeah, no, he looks great. I think other Michigan really pulled in a number of, you know, great freshmen to kind of fill in some of the talent that they lost last year. I'm just pulling it up here quickly. If I can get to some of their top times potentially. Yeah, I think, oh yeah, Luca Ladenovich, sorry, brother. I think he's from Austria, but 50.9 100 breasts, big story to follow. I think he might be a sophomore though. Anyway, a big swim from him. But like, I would agree with what you said. I think they were impressive to me in how they one stood up against Tennessee in the second round. Sorry, in the first round matchup and later on, in the third round, I thought they really, you know, had it performed overall pretty well, especially against, a team like Tennessee that probably overpowered them. Yeah, I think. I don't, anything else to add about that?
No, not really. One of the big stories was people were asking where Colin Gear was for Michigan. I saw that a couple times in the SwimSwam comments. He was a big swimmer from Michigan last year. Big Ten champion, the 200 fly, and NCAA a finalist. Turns out he ended up having mono, actually, and ended up missing the meet. But it sounds like he's back in the water and should be back for by the time Big Ten's rolls around NCAAs. That's a really big point flip there for Michigan. He's at a 139, 45, and 140 in the 200 fly, 100 fly, and 200 IM respectively. And that's an absolute game changer for them. So not having him and still being able to come out with the win against UVA and put up a really, really good fight against Tennessee twice was pretty big for Michigan. I thought they looked very good.
Other Tennessee had a few swims that looked great. Camille Swings looked great. Kobe Bujak Upton, freshman from Tennessee on the men's side. Big swim in the 200 free, 131.3. That really stood out to me. Nikolai Blackman, great in the 200 free as well. I think Tennessee looked great coming off. Go ahead.
I was going to say my swim of the meet, kind of just looking back at it, not necessarily swim, but it was really good to see Bella Sims back on kind of her. She's hitting her strides again, like she was kind of before Florida. Her against Claire Kirzan and the 100 back came down to a couple hundredths. That was really fun to watch. But she looks really good. Michigan women look really good. Caribe was throwing down some pretty insane times.
Yeah, and I think that was a talker that we had before the meet started, that he would be someone who needed to show up. I think he did. When it came down to swimming against ASU, I was saying, if he gets a win, maybe that gets him on a roll. And I think he did that in both the 50 and the 100. He went 18.4 and 40.9 and won those outright. Now, I think they lost a second and third place matchups, so it was ended up being a wash. But I mean, when you look at someone who needed to show up in the clutch, he was there for sure. But at the end of the day, I think if you look at both winning squads, I think it warrants some discussion. ASU men, we talked a little bit about would they show up again. Would they be able to, match some of the insane results that we've already seen them do this fall? And I think they did that exactly. They swam a little time trial on, I think it was Thursday night or something, and they had five or six men go under 19 in the 50 free.
So we had ASU, who had five or six men under 19 in the 50 free. And then the exact opposite end, you have the UVA woman who had four sub 440s and three girls that were 335 and were faster. Those two stats alone from those two teams is absolutely insane to me. The depth of sprinters and mid-distance freestylers for both those teams is just ridiculous.
Yeah. So I would say, I think as we move forward, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how this play out. And I mean, like you said, I think as we look about this kind of format being expanded into the future, I think you need to see more teams here, maybe introduce more of a round robin format. We definitely saw some meets being repeated. We saw Tennessee and Michigan face off twice, which it's okay. Oh, I guess, it's okay. But I think you'd like to see a little bit more variety, a little bit more unpredictability in the meet. So more teams, I think, ASU still might not be able to match up, but if you think about bringing a team in like Texas men against the Arizona State men, with the depth that they have in the sprinting core and some of the meet lineups that you see, I think there could be, a great potential for a great meet there if you just are able to attract some of these more high caliber programs to the meet. Could you get a Stanford women's team right now to a meet like this to size up or to square up against the UVA women? I think those are ways that I think could potentially be some improvements. But what did we saw a little bit of reaction from at least the Tennessee men's or the Tennessee swimming head coach, Matt Kredich. What did he kind of talk about?
Yeah, he had some positives and negatives. He talked to SwimSwam after the meet. Positives: last year he kept hearing that in order for the sport to be watchable, they need unpredictability. And that's kind of what they tried to come up with here. You know, they had a new scoring system that he really liked, that he liked that it forced the coaches to think differently. Not necessarily the scoring format of how it was, but the fact that it made coaches and teams think differently and how you had to prepare for that and prepare your team. And you really had to think about the lineups a little bit more. He really enjoyed the timeouts, which I think are a really cool thing, but he did talk about doing it in kind of a shorter period of time. He liked the second day. The second meet in a day was kind of a reward for the winning the first meet of the day if you did that as a team. So like you win the meet earlier in the day, you get the meet the second. Wow, excuse me, I can't speak. You get the second meet later that day. He really liked that. Just a little bit different. So you kind of get a reward for actually winning that first meet. And then kind of the load management, again, how you had to handle that as a coach. Every coach kind of went about that differently. ASU sent it from the beginning. He talked about his team kind of leaned into it and started out really fast, but ended up putting his better summers in more events later in the meet as you started to see a little bit more fatigue. And then some things he didn't like. He's not sure the scoring system itself is the best. Like I mentioned, he liked that it challenged the coaches to kind of think about things differently, but not necessarily the exact way of how they scored the meet. He agreed that a round robin would have been better, and he mentioned that their men's and women's teams didn't swim UVA at all, and the same thing goes for Michigan and ASU didn't swim each other at all. So it's a lot of repetitive matchups where if you have a round robin and then you have two teams who did the best in the round robin go against each other for first and second, and the other two teams go against each other for third and fourth, that makes a lot more sense because then you are for sure and guaranteeing that you will match up against every single team that's there. And he also didn't like, he liked the different order of events, but he thinks that he could make it a little bit more variables there. And he didn't like what he called strategic losing, which I'm guessing... calling out UVA, he said, everyone has a right to manage load, but I think that makes the meet less watchable and far less interesting. I'm not sure how to get around this. So interesting there, kind of a call out shot at UVA maybe, but he's got a good point. Like, how do you get around that to make it more interesting? Maybe you give swimmers more rest, so this isn't an issue. Maybe the doing a round robin will totally change that because then every single meet matters. If you lose, you could just be out of the championship. I don't know. There's a lot of different ways around that, and they have a lot of time to think about it. But what do you think about that, Casey?
I like that. That's a great quote over there from that first Carnage. You see, I mean, there's always going to be, you can call it gamesmanship, you can call it strategy, whatever you want, strategic losing. I think you see this more. I think this will be part of what we see. And if you're going to be the better team, I think you do have the right to, you know, how do we have some load management for these people? I mean, it's all about where people's motivation that if they're not worried about making it to the next round, I think they have every right to do so. I just think, you know, and once again, it's a swimming problem where we always want to see the fastest kids swim against the fastest team from the other swimmers. And when we don't see that, I think a lot of people have issues with that. And, you know, that's just, yeah. I think that's part of what swimming is.
You also, if you look at NCAA tournament, in baseball, even in basketball, there's a lot of load management there. If you're a 1 seed going up against a lower seed, a 16 or an 8 or whatever it may be,
these guys firing on all cylinders for their best,
for the toughest for later in the matchup. But I do think a round robin could potentially change that. I think that just fixes a lot of issues that maybe they had at this meet.
No, I think you're right. We also saw another reaction from Herbie Bem down from ASU. He had an idea that he dropped kind of as more of an overarching season plan, but kind of just, you know, as a reaction following up in the conversation that's followed since this dual meet tournament. He discussed an idea just to give a little outline. Every team in the NCAA does 6 dual meets for the whole year. Everyone does 6 dual meets. I don't think he said no more midseason. And these 6 dual meets would happen during the fall, and it would basically be every dual meet. If you win your dual meet, you get 3 roster spots for NCAA. And the current NCAA format or rules are that every team has up to 18 roster spots. So if you win a dual meet, the way it would work in this scenario is that you would get 3 spots. And then if you win your second dual meet, you'd have 6 spots. If you win your third, you'd have 9. So on and so forth. This way, I think, is really his way of, you know, incentivizing people to really embrace dual meets and make them matter in a way that ASU has certainly done and we're not seeing across the country at this point. And so I think he has a great idea in, you know, trying to figure out ways to motivate people to, you know, get out there and, you know, make these dual meets matter. Now, there would be issues that would come up there if with good teams having better schedules, it would be incentivized people, you know, to, you know, maybe beat up on the mid-major schools just to get their NCAA roster spot, roster size up. But I think Herbie is truly someone who is on the cutting edge of, you know, thinking about how we can improve the sport. And we've seen great meets out of ASU already this year. So any thoughts, the reactions you have about that, Des, or where you see?
I think it's a really cool idea. I just think there are a lot of issues that come up with it. If you do this format, then you're going to end up with, I don't know what the max number of participants. I think it's 100 at the women's meet.
What do you mean?
Do you know for NCAAs, the max number?
The max, I think women's meet is like 370 athletes get invited. Men's is like 270.
Okay, that's for some reason that's lower. Either way, you are almost close to doubling that number if you look at it the way he did of the guaranteed spots. So it makes the meet a lot bigger, which then you maybe have to make the meet longer.
Don't you think that he means too, though, that not necessarily, because I think he said as well in his take that the qualification would still go based off of the, you know, the rankings. So you would still have to be within the top 30 or top 20 or top 28 people in that given event. But let's say,
I don't think he mentioned that.
Okay, well, maybe not, but that's the way I interpret it. But
okay,
you certainly can run into a situation then where, I mean, I in a world I'm imagining is you have a team, let's say we've had a discussion about Cal, who doesn't, you know, really take dual meets as seriously during the season. Let's say they go 2-4 and they have 6 roster spots instead of 18. Then they come to ACC's, could potentially fill out an 18-person roster, but they only won 2 dual meets in the fall and they can only bring 6 people. I think that's where he's kind of getting at. And I think maybe, you know, I think Cal has the opportunity to be one of a super exciting team during the season, but right now we don't see that until NCAAs and ACCs. And I think that's really the core of what he's getting at.
My other thing is, you know, what about the teams that have a lot of really good summers? A couple of really good summers, maybe, that could qualify for NCAAs, but just don't have the depth to win the dual meets.
Yeah.
Absolutely screwing over those kids.
You throw one cupcake in there, let's say. You throw a cupcake in there, and you at least have 3 spots. And say you have, or you throw up 2 cupcakes in there, get 2 wins, so you at least have 6 roster spots. You get your boys, you get a relay to the meet, and you don't have to worry about it. It's really would put the motivation on the best teams who are, you know, thinking about have 15, 18 people going to the meet. And I mean, when you're talking about having high caliber matchups, like when you see those SEC teams in football go head to head, that's the matchup people want to see. Get the head to head where, you know, these people are fighting tooth and nail. There's roster spots on the line here. We have to win this meet. I think, you know, that really at the end of the day, if everyone's motivation comes from NCAAs, find a way to draw the motivation in a way that affects a team's, you know, affects their NCAA.
Yeah, situation. I agree. I mean, we definitely change how you recruit and stuff as well. I found this. So there are 200 D1 women's swim teams. So after one meet, 100 teams would win. That's 300 athletes in the meet. So you have to have some sort of cutoff line.
You know? Yeah, you'd have to revise. You'd have to revise.
The cutoff lines would have to change what they are now because they are slow enough now to the point where you're going to have a lot of smaller Division I teams that have a chance to qualify athletes, which is really, really cool. But when you add this format into it, you know, you might have 16 kids from
the kids at the meet in this area.
Yeah, right. So it adds a lot of interesting little things to talk about. But I really love the idea, and I love that it challenges what we have at the NCAA level right now. And I think that's what coaches and athletes and people have to keep doing.
Yeah. Well, I think we should run through, and I think that's getting into some of the the discussion we'll have here at the end of this pod. But I think we should get into then kind of the more traditional meets that we saw for kind of the blue blood midseason invites that we've noted in the last episode. Kind of just give a quick rundown. Most recently, Minnesota invites. I've been tough on Cal this year. I've been tough on them, especially the men's side. I think men's and women, they showed up and looked pretty darn good. I think Cal has a ways to go, but I think we're certainly promising. I think they can come out of this meet feeling pretty good. Luca Battaglini is one person who really stepped up on the men's side and really took a step forward after probably not the freshman year that he envisioned for himself. Came up and had some big swims, he's going to NCs now. Yamoto Okadon looks great again. Cal women looked great. My West looked really good. Claire Weinstein looked good. So I think they have to feel better about where they're at this point in time. You know, are they still going to shape up against some of the other top, the Floridas, the ASUs, the UVA women, the Texas men and women are quite there yet, but I think they probably are feeling a lot better about where they're at right now than they were, a month ago.
I agree. I think that they had a lot of swimmers who stepped up at this meet, and that's saying a lot. Cal, in the past few years, at least when they go to this Minnesota invite, sometimes they don't bring all their swimmers, but they usually swim pretty well. They like to split up the relays, but you don't usually see them firing all cylinders. Again, Durden is a let's wait until NCAAs type of coach. So seeing a lot of big time drops and a lot of younger boys step up had to be feeling really good on the men's side. And like you said, the women's side look really good. Weinstein and Tegan O'Dell look really, really awesome. Young team on the Cal women's side. Exciting for the future there.
Yep. I think they overall had a good meet, but there's some weird things in here. I mean, this maybe is a discussion this would invite. I think as a Minnesota fan, I think, I think we, for the preparation that, we had going to the meet, I think it was okay, some good, some bad. And I think that's kind of where the Minnesota invite sits right now. I think we have a number of teams. We have, I think UNLV usually shaves, Cal usually is a mixture, but mostly no, Minnesota's usually no, no shave. So you see a mixture of that. And I think, I want to say, so I'm disappointed in the meet, but I think there's certainly, we saw situations where, Cal men didn't even swim in a couple, didn't even put an A relay up for a couple of the relays, the 800 free and the 400 medley, I think. Like, from that same point, it's like, okay, well, like from their perspective, what are they doing coming to the meet? If you're going to come to the meet and not even swim in a relay in the night session, I think that leaves people like, well, what the heck? Like, what? And I think that brings in the whole question of something else. Like, what are the motivations that they have for this? Do you just want to come up to a meet where, they're going to be the top dog like they were in this meet and just, build confidence? I'm just trying to, figure out what they want out of this meet. And
they're guaranteed second swims, especially outside of Cal. Like, I was really not impressed by much that was going on at the meet. There were some really, really solid swims, some really good swims, but you look and compare this meet to like a Texas meet, and you even compare this meet to what it was 3 years ago. Just 3 years ago, you had Texas, you had Cal, you had Arizona, you had Harvard, you had Wisconsin, you had the Michigan. This was the invite to go to, and it's kind of fallen off a little bit. Now you have Cal, Harvard, Minnesota, and a couple other schools thrown in there. It's not the meet that it used to be, and I think it kind of shows. And there were a lot of solid swims up and down for Minnesota, for Harvard, UNLV, but it's just Cal domination throughout, and they're just playing with their food. Like,
well, I think the piece that I have about midseason that, and I mean, every coach has different motivations. I mean, we talked about it a lot, but back in the day, like you said, when Texas was at the meet, when Michigan was at the meet, when Wisconsin, Pitt were there, I think we had down to E final. And to me, that was just like everyone, they wanted everyone to be having, it was all about, let's have multiple, let's make sure everyone's getting multiple swims, or mostly everyone was getting multiple swims. And I get that. And I think it's good. I mean, you don't want to host a midseason. You don't want to fly across the country just to have, a person swim three prelim sessions and then be done. But I also think it doesn't really build the right picture of, and the proper motive. When you come to conference in February, you have a bad morning swim, you're watching it. And you're not swimming. And two, I feel like if you make it too easy for people to have second swims, then you're losing some of the value that the midseason, I think, can build. Even if you're not going to, you know, do a full preparation, that you still need to find a way to be like, okay, well, just so you guys know, we're not full prepped. That doesn't mean it's going to be super easy to get a second swim. You guys need to show up, and because come February, you don't have a good morning. There are two or three fine. There's an AB final if you're down at SEC, or yeah, I guess all the
SEC.
Yeah. So, but I mean, still, like, I mean, top 24 is no joke. And when you have eight, nine, 10 teams competing for 24 spots in the finals, you need to show up and get in the final that you need to be in. And so in this situation, there's not even 24 people in an event.
No.
You don't even have to show up. You can just, you know,
this year, but you have less teams. And like you said, you're basically encouraging poor performance in the morning to come back for a swim at night, especially when SEC, ACC, they only score through 16. So they swim through, but like, if you're not getting top 16 from the morning because of a great morning swim, you are just screwing over your team later on. Also, this goes back to my point from a couple weeks ago, is this is one of the meets that it was not scored. I understand Cal obviously won on both sides, but like, score the meet, make it interesting, give me something to look at. Like, I'm scouting through the results, I'm watching when I can, but like, there's no scoring. How are you going to get someone invested into a meet that doesn't have any scoring? If I'm someone who knows nothing about what an 1850 freestyle means, I'm not going to like go into the meet looking for fast swimming. I'm going to go into the meet to see who's in first, second, third, and fourth place. You're not helping our sport at all by not scoring out that meet.
Oh, yeah. As much as it hurts, I think we both swam at this meet four or five years in a row. And I think it hurts to, you know, I think as a fan, I think we swam at the meet when there was Texas, there was Michigan. And I mean, it was tough. I mean, I remember I multiple terrible morning swims, and I was not swimming at finals. And that was something that I had to, and I also had terrible swims, and I was still swimming at finals, which I was fortunate. I mean, I was thankful I had the opportunity, you know, try to step up at finals. But you know, college swimming is different. I think you need to understand that you got to sometimes learn some tough lessons and then, you know, make adjustments and move forward. So it's tough to, I hate, you know, having to, you know, have this taste in my mouth after this meet. And I enjoyed being there, but I think there's definitely something to be, I feel like we missed something at the meet from what we used to experience. And so hopefully that gets moving in the right direction next year and beyond.
Yeah.
Let's call it at that for the Minnesota invite. Then we'll move back to the week before Thanksgiving. I think biggest, I don't know. I mean, it's tough to say. Probably maybe biggest meet of the week was the Texas invites.
Yeah.
Texas men just went on absolute tear. Will Modulin, huge beat. 20.00, 50 back, looked great in the 100, 43. Yeah, whatever. Nate German Prez looked great. Cameron McKean looked great. I mean, you can go down the list. My boy, Julie, coach from Pitt, looking like a beast still, 41-1 in the 100 free. My swimmer of the fall. Any standouts for you, Des?
I mean, I called it as well. Mina Abraham, just keeping that streak alive. She was my swimmer of the fall on the woman's side, and she was 140.4 in the 200 freestyle. Very, very speedy here at midseason. My swim of the meet actually is Will Moglen, my swimmer, but like, the swim is not what you think it would be. It's not the 100 backstroke. It's not the 50 backstroke. It's the fact that Will Moglen, who is a backstroker IMer, went 50.9 in the 100 breaststroke. What are we doing?
Breaststroke is for, it's made up. I'm convinced now that I think either of us could go 50.9 in the 100 breast at this point. Shout out Max McHugh out there.
I mean, he's a backstroker going 50 point.
Anybody
like,
can
business.
Go 50 point. You heard it here first, folks.
I actually texted Casey. I texted him. I said, anything over 51.1 now, like, is not impressive to me. And I'm not saying as in 51.1 to 53 is not a fast swim. That's an incredibly fast swim. We just had four dudes on one team go 50 point or faster in the 100 breaststroke. Like, 50 point is becoming, you might not even get top 16 at NCAAs this year if you go 50.99. Well, 50.99 got 13.
You have all these non-breaststrokers going 50 point and they won't even swim in at NC.
No, it's ridiculous, dude. Nate German Pare was 49-7. Top three all time in that event now. Great for him.
For sure. The women's side was definitely a little bit. Maggie Wanizek had a big meets for Wisconsin, a couple 148 in the two back, I think it was 49 in the 100 back. Torrey Husk was solid, 21-0 in the 50. Lucy Bell was good. Caroline Bricker was good. Yeah, it was definitely not quite the same like Texas show as we saw on the men's side. Definitely a little bit more competitive. I actually don't know how do they score down there, the score of the meet?
I don't think they did.
Okay. I mean, I would guess Stanford women maybe probably would have won.
I think they won more events, and I think they were a little bit more dominant in the relays. Lucy Bell had herself a meet.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Wisconsin looked good, I think, for their first real big test under the new coaching situation. I think, you know, the men looked pretty darn good. The women, like I already covered a little bit, Maggie Wanizek looked great. The rest of the thing there. I thought Rex Maurer wasn't, you know, super sharp. That might have been on purpose. I don't think he necessarily needs to be firing all cylinders at this time of the year. Huber Koch also, he didn't swim. Question mark.
No, his little brother did though for Northwestern. Northwestern.
He was cooking. Jacob Wimberly looked amazing. 203 was cooking. So yeah, there was some interesting storylines there. Josh Staples from Northwestern, another person who just randomly, I mean, he didn't go 50 point. This kid is like a distance swimmer, goes 51.8 on 100 breast. Just furthering my point that anybody can be good at breaststroke. Except
it's
for
a
me.
Fake stroke, man. I don't know. Bob Bowman just once again solidified himself that if you are a good mid-distance swimmer,
you need to
be going to the University of Texas. Like, there's nowhere else in the world you should be looking at. He is that guy. I want to go back to touch on Wisconsin again. Jack Smith is doing a great job there. The women, like, they've always been able to bring in recruits ever since Beta Nelson, the women's side. So the women, like, it was kind of just like, how can I keep them excelling on a great level? And he did just that. The men's side was more impressive, in my opinion. They had some team records, it looked like, that were broken. The 100 fly, 100 breasts haven't been broken in a long time. And their men look really, really good. That was something where we were going into the year, weren't really sure how good the Wisconsin men were going to be. And they look awesome right now. So props to him to have them, you know, revving up and ready to go.
Yeah. But yeah, no, definitely. I think in terms of, you know, star power, and that was the kind of things. Fortunately, was another reminder that Texas is destined for greatness come March. It's going to be difficult to, you know, put a stop to it.
Not only that, but the Stanford women are not to be trifled with either. They looked good.
I think the women's side, you know, also highlighted the fact that, I mean, seeing some of the top, I mean, Stanford and Texas, some of the top women's program, I think it highlights the fact that there is going to be a battle on the women's side. I think UVA women are also certainly hot, but I mean, we saw Michigan women look great. We see, you know, I think there is going to be some interesting stories. But I don't think the women's side is at all as cut and dry as the men's side is right now. So certainly a discussion to have probably during this winter break period. You know, if you run a mock meet of the, I'd be interested to see what it looks like right now if you run a mock NCAA meet based on the midseason results that we see. So maybe something to, you know, keep an eye on maybe as we go through the winter, follow some time with some messing around with some mock meets. But yeah, anything else on this meet, Doug?
No, I got nothing.
Let's click over to the SMU invite. Probably not some of the, we saw Stanford men, which is random. We had two.
Yeah.
Stanford had two different meets in Texas. I guess the Stanford men just wanted a little bit more low-key midseason. overall, not a great meet. SMU women had a couple, you know, okay swims. Stanford men had some good swims. You're a fan, but you want to topping the Swim Cloud performance charts list. Ethan Act looked good again, 4:11 and 14:43 in the mile.
Liam Custer was solid.
Yeah. SMU men had a few decent performances, another 51.9. I mean, we shouldn't be highlighting breaststroke
Wow.
At this point, considering that it's just automatic, but
you're not going 50 point, I'm not highlighted anymore.
Don't call me unless you go 50 point. But I don't know. This one's a little bit, you know, like from the Stanford. Can you walk me through what my coach says? Like, if you're Stanford right now, like you're looking at, you see your women's team going to Texas, like, why? Explain to me why you would not want to be going to that meet as well. Like, what's the pull from the coaching side or what you're doing? Because, I mean, clearly they're spending the same amount of money to go to Texas from both sides. Why are the men at SMU and the women at in Austin?
I mean, one, they're separate programs. So,
all right, they can. Obviously.
They can. But I think a lot of it has to do with Stanford being a young team. A lot of their best swimmers, a lot of their good swimmers are really, really young. And I think it has to do with the confidence standpoint. You go to Texas, I mean, they're not ready to go up against a Texas team and go bar for bar with them right now. But I think if you go to a team, you meet like SMU, you get all of your swimmers' second swims guaranteed. You get all of your swimmers racing each other and you build up some confidence there. Then I think you keep the ball rolling a little bit more than you would if you went to a Texas invite and maybe got your shit rocked a little bit by the Texas men.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. Yeah. You don't want to, I mean, that's like we talked about why Cal might be going to Minnesota. I mean, you don't want to necessarily, you know, hurt the confidence of your boy, your little baby is freshman, sophomore on the team.
Yeah. Like if it's
by Texas, but
if your end of the season points are pretty much solely banking on your freshman sophomores performing, and you have to get them as much confidence as you can before they have to get to that point. It is probably my guess is what they're looking at that for.
Yeah. All right, let's not waste any more time with SMU. I think nope. That was teasing me, but let's get to the UGA invite. First line note that I've got is Luca Orlando. 136 bomb, 136.4 new NCAA record from Luca. Last day of the UGA invite, big swim. I know Mikey Joyce is still probably cheesing about that swim, but that was probably the swim of the meet. Obviously, NCAA record going down at midseason is usually something to keep an eye on. But I mean, Luca's a dog, so what can you expect? Other big swims. Josh Leando looked pretty good, 43.4. Elliot Woodburn from UGA, to stay on that mm-hmm. wave quick, freshman, sophomore breaststroker, is having a heck of a year.
Yeah,
it's cool. Breaststrokers. I keep doing this to myself. I keep getting hyped up about breaststrokers and then realize, oh, wait.
Georgia has had, in recent years, past 3-4 years, a lack of breaststroke has hurt them big time in relays, and looks like they did exactly, you know, they got a kid that can fill that spot pretty easily there. He's killing it. Florida, outside of Leando and, you know, Ahmed had a great mile, and really good 5-3. He was 14:39, 4:10. Outside of those two, like, not really impressed with them. Again, they're very similar to Cal, where they're going to show up to SECs and NCAAs, and they're going to look really, really good. But right now, for this meet, outside of those two, not super impressed. Tell me your thoughts on that.
Someone who's been on the NCAA runs didn't want to win. I think we've seen this in the past, so I'm going to try to read into it too much, but that was a little bit concerning from my end. Once again, Florida's another team that I think they don't put too much into midseason and kind of just throw their boys out there and say good luck. So,
you know,
and I think what I'll give them credit to, though, is they put themselves in a stacked meet with Georgia and LSU and Florida State, and they try to get in there and have a good fight. But any other names that I'm missing in there? I don't know.
On the men's side, no. On the women's side, I will say Anita Batazzo, Florida breaststroker, was really, really good. She was 56.9 in the 100. I want to say her split in the relay was some 25.8. You know, 206 in the 200, and she also was was on the 200 free relay, I believe, as well, throwing out some pretty nuts splits. So that's a big swim for her. She was 21.8 in the relay, 200 free relay, went 49 individually. Kennedy Dobson looks pretty good. I mean, she's always going to be solid for the UGA women.
Johnny Marshall was 45.1 on the 100 back, but I think if someone went 43.2 or whatever he did last year at MCS, I think if most people are like, I mean, if I had been basically two seconds off my PB at midseason, I would have, I've been feeling amazing going into the second half of the season. I mean, 45.1 isn't nothing to complain too much about, but still.
If there's any coach that can turn it around and turn a positive note on 45.2, it's getting Nasty. I mean, Nasty's probably telling him he's exactly.
For sure. But yeah, no, good meet overall. I think, good performance to both sides. I think that was probably this other meet to, rival what we saw were in Austin. Ohio State invite next came to play.
Wow.
We got Penn State there, just for people to know. Cincy, Ohio State, obviously. And Louisville, outside. Indiana, I think, clearly wanted to, remind people out there that they're going to not necessarily be in the hunt for the win, but certainly are in the hunt for the podium again. I think I had them ride into the, I thought they could take NCs last year. They obviously didn't, but I think they, retooled pretty well. Still have Zalon, still have Owen McDonald. Someone like Alexei Avakov really stepped up this year in the 100 breast, going 51.3.
I also want to shout out Alexei as well, because he, this past weekend, the other day, just went 59.4 in the 100 breast long course. So as a breaststroking school, that's really, really good to see that you're kind of going from one amazing breaststroker to another. Looking pretty good there.
Exactly.
Ben Brooks was a flyer freestyle. He went 49 last year.
Exactly. You know, they've been doing this for years, and now only people are catching on to it. On the women's side, Brandon Grana looks pretty good. 149.
Liberty Clark is throwing down.
Yeah, a pair of 141 swims. IU's looking good on both sides, which is a great sign coming out of there.
Miranda Grana was someone who did some really, really well. You just mentioned her name, 149.0 and 49.8 in the backstrokes. Someone who's always been a good swimmer, but I did not have her going 49.149 at midseason on my bingo card. She's a sophomore. Again, very, very good swimmer. She was also 49 on the 100 fly as well. So
resume to pull out of midseason?
Yeah, no shit.
One thing of note before we kind of move on to the last couple of meets that we got, but I think Penn State men are a team that deserves a little shout out. Probably the person I'm particularly impressed with, Mariano Lazzarini, really stepped back up, particularly at this meet. I think we maybe discussed it in a pod a couple pods ago or something, but he definitely had a rough season last year coming off his 2023 Big Ten championship win in the 100 breast, but came back to play this year, 50.9 in the 100 breast and showing some 200 prowess as well. I think he was like 151 or 152. So that's definitely a great sign for them. I think they looked pretty darn good in some other areas of the team. I'd have to pull up the results just to rattle off some of those. But when I remember looking at this meet a couple weeks back, I was, definitely looking at Penn State as a team that, has been in the bottom of the Big Ten for the last few years and is looking good again this year. So that's, I think, something that they've got to be feeling pretty darn good about.
I agree.
Bregagna, another one, their butterfly or sprinter. He looked good. So
yeah.
Aaron Shackle, actually, before we go.
Yes, go Aaron Shackle. And I was going to also mention Nicholas Finch as well from Yale. Finch is 44.6. He's a freshman for Yale and 18.9, the 50 free. 42.2 hard free. Very good swims there. And then Aaron Shackle's back.
Is he back? I mean, certainly. This is the third program in 3 years in the NCAA. So certainly, I think we can probably say this is the best midseason performance I've seen from him thus far. So that's a good sign. Certainly is an interesting situation that he's got going on. Still training with his club, from my understanding, in Carmel, competing for the Indiana swim team. I guess that's within the rules, so to each their own. But He's 4'11" and the 5'3". I think he had a pretty good 200 fly. I don't have the result pulled up here, but he was 141 or something. But certainly a good, I mean, he's someone you've certainly seen in the long course stage quite a bit and has just not panned out at all in the college NCAA world. So for IU to finally get him and get him in the right direction in the short course pools, kudos to them, because it's not necessarily been the easiest journey.
Yeah, no, he was 132.223. Tomas Navakonis looked really good as well for Ohio State.
Yep, certainly. Matthew Klinge looked good for OSU too.
Mm-hmm.
Sophomore coming off a great freshman year. He got under 45 in the 100 fly. I think he was under 19 again in the 50. So
I believe so.
That kid's like, he's like 6 foot, a buck 65. I don't, maybe he got bigger this year, but that kid is raw for him.
Really?
His frame, yeah.
And then obviously Yankovic was also very good.
Yeah. Canadian, he's good. So I think
to our last midseason meet, I believe, right?
NC State. NC State, this then, is, go ahead.
I would say this is one of the meets where you look at the results and you're like, really fast swims, but a lot of swims that we kind of saw coming because of how they did at their invite earlier, the NC State invite with Virginia Tech and Ohio State, that one meet that they did.
Raleigh Rumble? Or what?
Raleigh Rumble. Pretty similar times there. NC State swam a little bit faster, but like a lot of times you feel like you saw coming.
I'm going to give you the opportunity, Des, to put respect back on Jerry Fox's name. Go ahead.
Jerry Fox is a dog, okay?
41.
Oh, it's been a dog. I never doubted Jerry Fox.
Mm-hmm. Jerry Fox looked good. Hudson William looked good on the backstrokes. Ty Winkler was solid again. Thomas Luke Minnis from Arizona, 41.3 in 100 free is big.
131.82.
200 guy, 131.8 was he was, but that's a really big swim for him. Brandon Whitfield looked good again, getting under 42 in the 100 free. On the women's side, we saw Erica Palaya was 149 in the two back. Leah Shackley, 149 in the two back.
Two 149 two backs before we move on from those two. Having two girls under 150 at midseason for NC State.
Bad backstroke crew. Not a bad
That's backstroke. A pretty good backstroke crew there.
Yeah.
Duke, 205, 200 breaststroker in Kaylin Gridley. That's pretty big.
Yep. That's a good swim. Leah Shackley looked good. Nelly Yefimova, the breaststroker from NC State, looked good. A couple of 57, 58 swims. I do want to actually go back here a second before we wrap up our midseason discussion. Allow Des another second to discuss what was going on with his Kentucky boys. We didn't even mention that they're all at the Ohio State invite. Where were the Kentucky Wildcats?
That's a really good question, man. Like I said, I don't believe in them.
They're missing an action.
I can't make my decision on them yet. They
hate some.
It seems like their freshmen were doing pretty well again. They had some pretty good swims. Carson Hick swam pretty well, I believe, in the mile. He was under 15 minutes, but nothing outstanding.
Alamana, Tafui.
He
was
slower.
That was a bummer for me. We'll keep an eye out. But with that, I think we should probably wrap up at least the midseason discussion or the kind of just a recap of some of the big results, storylines that we saw at some of the meets. I think it's time. We'll just go a little, we have some takeaways to discuss. That is before we wrap up this episode. Mm-hmm. We've been cooking for an hour here. But I think here we go. We just spent, you know, the last 40 minutes, 40 to 35 minutes going through all these different meets. And I think it just makes it. There's a lot, the week before Thanksgiving, there's like five high caliber midseason meets going on and the miscellaneous ones here or there. I mean, we see Notre Dame was at Miami of Ohio invite. You got teams all over the place. And from a, it's a lot to take in as a fan. And I think it really just, I don't know, like, it doesn't get me that excited as it used to. And I don't know if that's, I don't know what that is. I mean, when you have other meets going on, like the Tennessee invite or dual meet tournament happening, that's, you know, maybe took some of my focus. But I just think, I don't know what the place is for midseason anymore. I just feel like there are some teams that take it really seriously. There are some teams that don't. And I think at the end of the day, conference and NCs are where people want to perform. And I just, you end up, I can't take that much away from midseason because I know half the teams aren't prepared for it. So it's like,
I think that a lot of that stems from the dual meet tournament that happened at Georgia Tech, the Raleigh Rumble. All of these teams swimming lights out at dual meets leads up to midseason. And I just feel like we knew we weren't going to see anything crazy. And now, like, we were obviously proven wrong. There are a lot of great swims, but like, it doesn't get me excited when there's already this other fast swimming that happened and these new things that we got to see.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think it's a matter of when you have these other events, I think you expect all the teams to show up and be, you know, ready to swim fast, or you have that expectation. I think midseason now we have an expectation of, you know, some teams are prepped, some teams aren't. And so when you have other, like you said, other events that are bringing more excitement, then it takes away the excitement that midseason used to hold because there wasn't anything else to get excited about. Now you have other things that are actually getting people more. When you have other products that are more exciting, like the dual meet tournaments and Raleigh Rumble, stuff like that, you aren't as excited about the midseason situation because we've seen the same thing happen over again. I don't think you can sell me on the fact that the current midseason format is something that is better than at least people trying to do, you know, the tournament, the dual meet tournaments, and make that more exciting than it currently is. So,
yeah,
you know,
there's an attempt there, right? And this is kind of in my takeaway. While the CSCA dual meet was a really good try, I just don't think that's the long-term fix. I just think there's a lot that needs to change before that comes the norm in the NCAA for midseason. Like, I know the lady in the CSCA podcast with Gold Medal Mel she's like, we want this to become a thing, right? We want this tournament to become the norm. And there's just so much more that needs to happen before we can do that. There's so much more change in this sport. There's so much more change in the dual meet format. The tournament format that needs to change before we can do that. And I think that that's what was shown these past couple of weeks was like, before we get to that, we are a ways away from that being the norm in the NCAA.
Yep. Yeah, you're exactly right. So, I mean, we can beat a dead horse forever talking about these meets and what it looks like, but I think at the end of the day, it was a big fall of people trying stuff different more than we've ever seen before in the NCAA. And I think that's a good thing. And I think it's really changing the whole system. I mean, one thing that we need to talk about, and I think Cal maybe refuted this take a little bit in the last week, but when you now see teams like ASU that are they're very open and honest that they want to swim fast at every single meet, I think that really changes the recruiting playing field for kids in high school who are looking at schools that they want to go to, and you're thinking, I mean, I like swimming because I want to swim fast, and I get that everyone is mostly focused about the end of season going personal best, but everyone likes to swim fast all the time. When you look at a program like ASU, who wants to swim fast at every single meet all the time, and a team like, I don't know, I don't want to just destroy Cal, but Cal or Florida or other programs like this where it's not as, not quite the same thing. They're not, you know, they're not going to swim fast. I don't know, if it was me going through the process again, I might take a look at a team like that. Who, I mean, I think all swimmers want to swim fast. And I think, you know, that could be some of the reason we start to see recruiting breakdowns or other things like this, where you're trying to find different ways to motivate kids to come to your program. And you can certainly recruit off success and stuff like that. When you can prove time and time again that you can swim fast all year long, like a school like ASU has proven, I don't know. I think that's a pretty good way to, you know, flip the script. And I think they've done that. So
I also think when you look at the teams that are known for going fast pretty much only at the end of the year, the Florida, the Cal, those types of teams, the type of work that they're known to do is really, really hard work. Like, you are getting your ass whooped for 8 months and it is hard. You're doing a lot of long course, a lot of yardage. Like, that's how Nesty works. Durden's a lot of really hard hard sets, hard workouts. You know, when you see that as a recruit, that seems a lot less appealing than going to an Arizona State. I'm not saying they don't do hard stuff there. They obviously do, but you're gearing up to swim fast at every single meet, like you said, whereas Texas and Cal are looking at it like, we're going to kick your ass day in and day out until ACC, SEC, NCAAs comes around. And as a recruit, that's like, why would you not want to go do that?
Yeah, it builds confidence too. You think, I mean, you certainly don't want to read into what's going on behind the scenes at different programs. When you look, I mean, we just talked about Luca or some of the other kids that freshman, or other freshmen at Cal who, and sometimes, and that happens. Sometimes it takes a kid a year to come around in the new college system, but when you get beat into the earth for the first year, you don't have a great opportunities at dual meets to, you know, be prepped and swim fast, it ends up taking kids a lot longer to come through. If you come into a program where the expectation is right away, everyone's going to swim fast at every dual meet, you get set up for success at those meets, that speaks, I mean, you can get kids on a roll. And I mean, I think that there's a lot to be said for that in swimming when you get people building confidence in their swimming and, you know, being ready to go fast more often. So
I agree.
Not everybody is up for it now. And who knows, maybe we're not the ones who are in the coach, or I'm not the one in the coaching room right now. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. So any closing thoughts, Des, before we call it quits on this one?
No, that's a good one. A lot of information. Hope you guys enjoyed your listen. Hopefully we can get back and talk about some more swimming in the next couple of weeks.
Yep. We'll try to get back on a little bit more consistent basis here, coming in, maybe have some fun, like we mentioned earlier, doing some simulations, review of the first, you know, half of the year a little bit more, discuss some, you know, people that we might have missed somewhere along the way, you know, that sort of thing as we start to really just build into conference season over the next couple of months. So once again, thanks everyone for tuning in. Certainly check out socials and the YouTube, and feel free to leave comments on YouTube, Spotify, whatever, of stuff that you want us to cover, things you don't want us to cover, takes that we botched, swimmers that we missed, Des slander, things of that nature.
Of course, all that stuff.
Mostly Des slander. But with that, we will sign off, and thanks for tuning in.